Raised a Palestinian Lebanese Christian in a Jewish area of New York City, Najla Said felt not entirely American and not entirely Arab. Conflicted about her identity, she spent her youth hiding in the background, worried about being stereotyped. But by visiting the Middle East, she learned that identity does not always come in a tidy package, and she became proud to be an Arab American. Actress and author Najla Said discusses her personal conflicts and her journey to self-acceptance on Midday, after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, everyone. Our second hour, Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Our guest in this hour of the show is playwright, actress, and author Najla Said. In her memoir, Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family, Najla recounts her struggle to understand her roots in the face of negative stereotypes about Arabs in the Middle East. The daughter of a Palestinian-American father and a Lebanese mother, Najla grew up in the Upper West Side of Manhattan among Jews and people of other ethnicities, but she went to a prep school on the Upper East Side. While her peers were blonde and white, Najla felt like an outsider and feared that if people discovered that she was of Arab descent, they would shun her. Her father was Palestinian-American intellectual Edward Said, founder of the field of post-colonial studies, and familiar to people who might have seen him on national television a couple of decades ago. Najla was accustomed to seeing her father appear on national TV and having Peter Jennings call on the family's home phone. Her parents refused to define themselves, infuriating Najla as she pressed them on their political beliefs. While other people could give easy answers about their background, Najla did not. And feeling ashamed and unsure exactly why, she aimed to make herself invisible to her classmates and teachers, preferring to blend in at any cost. Living in the United States, Najla confronted those who thought Arabs were a monolithic culture, all Muslim, all violent, all extremist. Najla didn't know what to think, but traveling back and forth between the Middle East and New York, she grew proud of all the parts of her heritage. The result of all this is a book. It's a very enjoyable book called, what did I just give the title? Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family. Najla Said, I welcome you to Midday on WYPR in Baltimore.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and congratulations on the opening line of the book. I mean, the opening, I just love great openings, and you've got one here, because the key is if you read the first sentence, maybe the first two sentences, you got to read the rest of the book.
Yeah, that's what I had no idea that it would be that enjoyable, but everyone loves those first two sentences, and I'm glad.
I'm gonna read it because we're gonna start there, and we're gonna diagram the sentence, and you can explain it all for us, okay?
Sure.
I am a Palestinian - Lebanese - American Christian woman, comma, but I grew up as a Jew in New York City. I began my life, however, as a WASP. Okay, let's do a little bit of the family tree here as we unpack that sentence. So,
okay,
I mentioned your father, Edward Said, who I do remember from national television, being called to national TV to news programs whenever there was seemed like there was a crisis in the Middle East. Am I correct?
Right. Yes, which was very often.
Yeah,
as we know.
So that was Edward Said, Palestinian American, your father.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and your mother. Let's talk about her.
My mother is Lebanese. She's from Lebanon, from Beirut, from a Christian family. But actually, her grandfather had gone to a Quaker school. There were a lot of, schools founded by the British and the French and Americans. And her grandfather had gone to a Quaker school and sort of become taken with Quakerism. And he had converted to Quaker. My mother's extended family is Greek Orthodox Christian, but she grew up Quaker in Lebanon.
Wow. That adds another
layer
here.
One of three Quaker families in Lebanon. Yeah.
Okay. And when you say I grew up as a Jew in New York City, what do you mean?
Well, when I was a kid in New York in the 1970s and 80s and early 90s, New York was much more divided. Like, now it's much more gentrified and there's a lot of mix. But it was – Upper East Side was mostly WASPs and Upper West Side was mostly liberal Jews. And that very stereotypical Woody Allen – like, old Woody Allen movies like Hannah and Her Sisters kind of thing – that was what the West Side was like, and that's where I lived. And it was intellectuals, mostly Jews. It's still very Jewish. And I went to a private school on the East Side where everyone was blonde and their families had come over on the Mayflower. And I lived on the West Side with dark hair, so I just thought I was Jewish. And I basically was, and people still think I am from the way that I talk. There's sort of a conflation with Jewish. It's sort of like this Jewish-Italian-slash-New-York thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know what to do with me because I don't look like what they think an Arab should look like. So people often think I'm Jewish.
Okay. And as far as the WASP part of that goes, where you began life, you actually were born in Boston.
Right. So my dad was born in British Mandate Palestine. And his family was Anglican because they were well-to-do. And they lived in a very nice part of Jerusalem. And they were Anglican. So... that translates into Episcopalian here. So I was baptized as an Episcopalian. And then my dad was an English professor. His specialty was 19th century British literature. And when I was born, he was teaching at Harvard for the semester. So I was born in Boston. And I basically was a Episcopalian. And then I went to this WASPy school. So
I gotcha. All right, I got it. That's where you began.
So, what's
life.
Arab about me? Nothing.
Now, what is Arab? And so the first question would be so, and I love the photograph on the cover of the book is Najla at what age?
I think 5 or 6.
Five or six. She's so cute. Anyway,
thanks.
So, when does the awareness come? When does this epiphany come that I'm Arab? Or is this something your parents make very clear to you? Or do you find yourself eating hummus a lot? I mean, when was it?
Right. Well, that was the thing that was so strange was that at my mother, to this day, she still speaks with an accent, and she speaks to me a lot in Arabic or a mix of Arabic and English. We always ate Arabic food at home. We went to Lebanon all the time. But the differences between my mother and father were that my father, my father's father had come to America and then moved back to the Middle East. So my father was born with an American passport. So he came here to go to boarding school when he was about 14. And he basically had no accent. And he would say he was Palestinian, but I didn't know what Palestinian was because I was little and I'd never been there. So I didn't – and so he sounded American and sometimes he sounded British. So I didn't really – and he was an English teacher. So I didn't really know – what he had to do with being Arab. But he could speak Arabic with my mom, and a lot of his family was in Lebanon. So I sort of didn't really get my dad. Like, I didn't understand his ethnic background.
I can understand
but
why,
I just I just kind of ignored it because my mom was so rooted in her Lebanese-ness, and my dad's mother lived in Beirut, and his sisters, many of them lived there. So it didn't seem like Palestinian was something that I had to worry about because it wasn't a place I ever went to. So I just thought we were Lebanese, but we lived in America.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But
you know, it's so much easier when your parents are, I'm speaking in general terms here, your parents are from the same country or speak the same language or are both born in America. And it's so much simpler. You don't have these conflicts as a kid growing up wondering who's who and what's what and why are they different, right?
Right.
Because actually until, I would say, the last few decades, it was kind of unusual to marry outside of your religion, for instance.
Right.
To marry someone from a different ethnic group. I mean, that's still kind of a new phenomenon in this country.
Yeah, it really is, actually. Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, and the WASP ideal is interesting to me. What you said about the kids you went to school with on the Upper East Side. And you're on the West Side, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of the WASP ideal, you know, that you want to be blonde and
skinny
and freckle-faced, and yes. maybe a few freckles, but and dress is sort of the Ralph Lauren ideal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I identify with this a little bit because of the town I grew up in was full of Italian, Portuguese, and Irish immigrants.
Uh-huh.
And everybody else could trace their ancestry to the Mayflower. We used to say some people can trace their ancestry to the Mayflower. Most of us trace our ancestry to steerage, you know, in the
right.
right. So,
yes.
But there is this ideal in America. It's sort of the Martha Stewart ideal
that's
aesthetic, right?
Example.
Would you say?
Yeah, that's perfect. And it's like, you know, it's like Greenwich, Connecticut.
Yeah.
Martha Stewart,
right.
Sweater sets, pearls, that kind of thing.
Well, did you ever see anyone in your family striving toward that? Or did you just feel this pressure because you went to Chapin?
I just would look at myself and then look at the girls I was in school with, and they seemed to all somehow know each other and live near each other and have country houses near each other. And a lot of them would talk about, oh, my ancestors came over on the Mayflower or whatever. I mean, there were Jewish girls in my class too, but they didn't really advertise their Jewishness. And as long as you lived on the East Side, you sort of fit that that mold,
mm-hmm.
and everyone sort of dressed and looked the same. And my family was, like, interestingly enough, much more European looking. We weren't even like it wasn't that we were so Arab. It was that my parents, like, I think I say this in the book, but, like, everyone in my class had polos on their shirt, and I had an alligator, which now sounds ridiculous. But it was, like, this idea that there was, like, we were somehow of a different culture. I mean, we were still upper middle class or whatever it was. But I was from this, like, weird place where everything was a little bit different. Mm. And these girls all seemed to have the same clothes and the same friends and the same lived in the same neighborhood. And I just thought my parents had not done their homework correctly.
Well, I'm going to ask you about that. Their decision to send you to that school. I mean, your friends were on the Upper West Side near where you lived, right, when you were a girl?
When I was small. I grew up, what's interesting is the Upper West Side at the time was much more, there were far, first of all, in New York City, there were far fewer public schools that you could send your kids to with any confidence. And since education was the most important thing to both my dad and my mom, because my mom is actually from a family of educators, they wanted me to go to the best school possible. So both my brother and I were sent to private school. The school that my brother went to, I actually ended up going there for high school, but when I was little, when I was starting school, it was all boys. It hadn't become co-ed yet, so I couldn't go there. And my mom's mom in Lebanon, who was quite a formidable woman herself, had been the headmistress of an all-girls school that was actually the first and only national secular school in Lebanon. And my mom had gone there, and it had been a really good experience for her. So she thought, I think that I want to send my daughter to an all-girls school. So I applied to, like, the four top all-girls private schools. And I didn't get into two of them because I wouldn't talk. I was really shy. And I got into Chapin, so they thought it would be good for me. And, you know, in retrospect and since the book's come out, I realized that they're really proud of me, and they've been really supportive and wonderful. And it wasn't the most horrible place on earth.
No.
It was just I was so different. I just felt so different. And
And how old were you when you went there?
5.
Oh, boy. So this is pretty. So your whole experience was from was feeling different.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and my nursery school had been at Columbia, near Columbia University, where my dad taught, and there were a lot of international kids there because it was a university environment, and our parents all knew each other because they were professors, and so this was a completely. I went to this school, and it seemed like all these girls had gone to nursery school together on the East Side and
mm-hmm.
already knew each other. Their
mm-hmm.
parents seemed to know each other. They all seemed to go to Southampton and be near each other on the weekends and in the summer. And I didn't really seem to know, like, anything about their world.
And you thought there was something wrong with you?
Yes.
Let me ask you this, because, mm-hmm. Najla, we're going to take a break. We take two breaks during the hour. We're going to take the first one here in a minute. But I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. When was the first time you were conscious of being Arab in a way that made you a little fearful, or made you sense hostility or worry anyway that people around you might be hostile toward you because, or your family because you were Arab? How old were you by then?
Probably six.
Really? Only at the age of six?
Yeah, because until then I did. Well, it's interesting. When I started kindergarten, it was 1979. In kindergarten, I think I was okay. I just felt like I looked different and I had different clothes. But I think first grade, the Iranian hostage crisis was going on. And I talk about this in the book. In my first grade year, they was when they freed the hostages, and we got the TV brought into our classroom to watch this. And I was so excited. And I went home and told my mom, and she was like, oh, they were able to free the hostages because the Algerians helped them. The Algerians are Arab, and you're Arab, and you should be proud. And I was like, no, we're American, because, you know, I was too little to understand nuances. So I wanted to be the good guys. And the Americans seemed to be the good guys. And so I was like, why are we different? And who are we? You know, so that was around the time that it started to feel weird.
We'll take a break here and come back and talk some more with Najla Saeed. Her book, Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab American Family. It's published by Riverhead Books. Najla Saeed, our guest for this hour of Midday. Dan Rodericks here. A short break. We'll be right back. And Dan Rodericks here, our guest this hour, Najla Saeed, talking about her book, Looking for Palestine. And Najla, I just want to mention to our listeners that you actually created a play based on your experiences a few years ago. It ran off-Broadway, was very successful. And so the book comes out of the play, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am a professional actress, and I was... you know, after 9/11, it became very clearly this thing where I found myself constantly being, it's like I was suddenly branded an Arab American. That became my ethnicity in terms of my career. So I began being sent out for auditions for only Arab women, which were not written very well because nobody in this country really understands that Arab women. You know, you watch TV, you see movies, the characters are generally, if they're going to portray an Arab, it's generally a man. And maybe his wife will have a scarf on her head and be quiet.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't have full lives. And so that was it, you know, first of all, that's nothing like the women I've ever known in my life. I mean, I just mentioned my grandmother running a school and having like a PhD, so that's different. But it was frustrating, and I thought, well, I want to define myself because this is not going to work as a career if I'm constantly going to be. And so I thought this would be a good way. And so it started as a 15-minute piece that I basically came out of a journal entry that I'd written when my father passed away in 2003. And then the theater company encouraged me to continue writing it. And part of it is because of what I say in the first sentence of the book, the idea of I identify right away as a Jew in certain ways. And so right away, it's a little disarming because this is such a contentious topic. So people are able to not stop listening because I'm not setting up this dynamic where they're like the Jews and the Arabs. I'm just saying, this is my story. And then you kind of go on the journey with me to learn about the Middle East the way I did.
Right.
I think people are so intimidated by the topic too. So like you just want to, I just wanted to say, like, even though my dad is this famous Palestinian, I kind of was confused, too, because at the end of the day, I'm American. And I was being completely confused by the images and the cultural – just the ethos of, like, how Americans feel about the Middle East.
How did you settle on the title of the play and now the book, Looking for Palestine?
Well, this might be a disappointing story, but when I wrote the play, the first time I did a reading of it, when it was still 15 minutes, I had just been in Lebanon that summer in 2006, and I'd written another piece that I also performed at the same event about Lebanon in 2006, and I called it Lebanon. So they said, what's the other one called? And I said, I don't know, Palestine? Because at the time, it was essentially just about this trip I took to Palestine when I was 18.
Right.
And I always say this. When I used to have to write papers in school, I could never come up with an interesting title, and my dad would always help me with it. So ever since my dad died, I don't know how to write a title. So when I did the play, we took the 15-minute piece, and my dramaturg and director and I worked from that piece to create the full-length play. And in his mind, he kept guiding it toward, like, structuring it toward the title, which was Palestine. I was like, well, we're going to change the title. We're going to change the title. And he was like, I don't think we should. So we ended up using it as the title, which I still am not sure is the perfect title for the play. But then when I was writing the book, I came up with this really creative title, and I was so proud of myself. And my editor was like, it's too long, and it's not really this essence of the book. So she kept – and I was like, well, I don't want the word Palestine in the title because I don't think that's what it's about. And I was like, you can put a question mark if you want, but I don't
– Well, what was the title you came up with?
A Happy Gaping Wound of Love, which is in the book I talk about figuring out what my name means. And there's a moment where I realize – so Saeed means happy. Wadad, my middle name, means love. And Najla means big brown eyes, like cow-like eyes. Huh. But it also can mean gaping, as in a gaping wound. So I have this bit in the book about how happy gaping wound of love is what my name means, and then how it fits, because I'm kind of like that. But my editor had said, it's funny, but it's the book's not really about you. Which, and then she said, no offense. But she said, I get what she's saying.
I like your title. I'm not blowing smoke either. No, I like that better. But anyway.
But it's the idea that this is a memoir about
growing up confused in an Arab American family.
Exactly.
I want to ask you about religion.
Yes.
So your dad is Palestinian American. Your mom, you explained her experiences, her growing up Lebanese American, and Christianity's in there. But was it practiced? And what were you encouraged to practice religion as a kid? Did your parents talk about it?
That's a very loaded question. So my father's family is my dad's dad was Anglican, and my dad's mom was actually Baptist.
We didn't get the Baptists in here. Oh my goodness.
Oh yeah.
I know you mentioned
story.
The Quaker before on the grandfather.
So my great grandfather, my dad's mother's father, was from Nazareth, Palestine, which, as we all know, is where Jesus is from. And he came to America at some point for a, you know, American dream. He got on a boat and was like pursuing some business thing, and it didn't work out. So he ended up in Waco, Texas, and became a Baptist minister. And then he moved back to Palestine, to Nazareth, and founded the first Baptist church in Nazareth. So my grandmother was raised in this very sort of evangelical Christian environment in Palestine. So she was religious, very religious. My grandfather, I think, was pretty religious just because traditionally they were very Christian. So my father, in his memoir, he writes about how he had to go to church for like 17 hours on Sundays and and then, you know, Sunday school and then the dinner. And so that's how he was raised. My mother was an anomaly because her immediate family was Quaker in the larger context of their extended family, which was Greek Orthodox. So they were basically Christian, but my mother's Lebanese, and Lebanon, all of the problems in Lebanon come from religious, because it's divided by sect, and that's what the Civil War was about. And her parents were humanists, because they were Quaker, so they were secular humanists. So even though she was raised traditionally, I mean, because these are conservative countries where you celebrate holidays the way you should, so they did everything Christian and were Christian, but she was raised as a humanist. My father, because he was an intellectual and because he had such he was so over the church by the time he was a grown-up, was, though he was from a very Christian family, was also secular and a humanist. And so my parents raised me and my brother. I mean, we celebrated Christmas and Easter, but we didn't really talk about Jesus. And, you know, I learned about that stuff because both of the prep schools I went to were essentially Episcopal schools. So I got all that information about the Bible, and my parents knew it really well, and they could talk to me about it. But I didn't go to Sunday school. I didn't go to church. I think my grandmother was not happy about that. But my mother hates religion, hates it. And my dad was just like, whatever.
Well, that's what I mean. A secular humanist, that's sort of what it means to me. And if you're leaving your kids with that, you're saying basically you figure it out. Look within. Or maybe you'll figure it out when you're an adult. Right?
Well, and the other thing that I do think that I didn't learn this until I grew up and very recently. Being a humanist is kind of this great thing. It's just confusing when you're small because you don't know what it means. But basically, it does teach you what I think is the essence of most religions, which is that we're all equal and you should be nice to everybody.
Oh, no, there's a positive part to it. I'm just, but
right.
But
in terms
you're
of
left
like,
to figure it out. It's like,
yeah,
and some
it
people
took
think,
me a long time.
Yeah, some we
and
ha-
also,
we had some atheists on the show here a few months ago talking about how it's too early in life to set your kids one path. You got to let them figure it out for themselves later. So
I think there was traditional, in school also we learned about the nativity. I learned all those stories. The thing is it was I, like every other American kid, was only aware of pretty much Judaism and Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not know anything about Islam, which made it even more confusing because apparently I was supposed to know about Islam. So number one, I wasn't Muslim. And number two, I really didn't know what it was. So, that's what made it a little bit
I'm wondering,
confusing.
I can understand. I'm wondering about this, though. When you met people, what did they think you were? And how did you answer the question like, where are you from or where is your family from or what are you? However
when
it came up.
When I was a kid?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, this may be why I never spoke. I just said nothing. I would just be quiet. I was just so shy I wouldn't talk. But if I were pressed, I would say, I don't know. Because it was the 80s when I was a kid in Lebanon. If I said my mom was from Beirut, I would get, a whole bunch of looks. And
well, let's explain why. Because we had, in 1982, I think it was, we had a...
Yeah, Civil War in Lebanon was from 1975-76 until 1989,
right.
1990.
We had Marines killed in the barracks.
Yeah, 83, and then 82 was the Israeli invasion, and there were a lot of Jewish people in New York, so that was when Israel and Lebanon were at war, and I knew that a lot of people I knew were Jewish, and a lot of the people around me were Jewish, and so I was like, they're going to hate me if they know I'm from Beirut. So I just would be like, I don't know where I'm from. I forget.
So you worried because you were aware of what was happening in the news or your father spoke about it? You worried about letting people on as to what your background was?
Well, my dad really started to be on the news. So let's say I started kindergarten in 1979. And then throughout the 80s, I was so little in the beginning. And we would, Lebanon was in this war, but it's not, my friends didn't really ask me about it. They kind of would assume I was like Indian. They weren't really sure where I was from, and it didn't really matter. As I got older, in about seventh or eighth grade, so this is like the late 80s, was when the first Intifada started in Palestine, and my dad was on TV almost every single night. And my friends were like 13, 14. They would see it, and they'd be like, so I felt like I can't pretend, really. So I'd be like, yeah, my dad's Palestinian, but he was born with an American passport and he's Episcopalian. And so I would sort of focus on the things that made me just like everyone else and try to like push away the Arabness. By that point, I felt like it was okay if my mom was Lebanese. But my
your
dad
father,
had to be.
Your father was proud of having been both Palestinian and Arab. I mean, how would he put it to people? How would he describe himself?
Well, he used to say he was Palestinian. And my brother, in his typical, little boy trying to be like his dad, would be like, we're Palestinian, Palestinian, Palestinian. And I was like, I didn't know what I was. I was little. I didn't know what it was. I didn't know I'd never been there. I didn't understand. My brother seemed to understand it. So I was like, okay. I just thought we were from Beirut. I didn't know that Palestinian was different from Lebanon. I didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
So, my dad would throw that, you're a Palestinian little girl. And I'd be like, I am. But I'd never met it. I just didn't understand what it was. So, and then my mom, and my dad, being sort of Arab nationalists, would then make sure that I understood, because in Lebanon, especially during the 80s, there was a lot of major animosity between the Lebanese Christian, right-wing Christians, and the Palestinians. They wanted the Palestinians out of Lebanon. So a lot of the fighting was between those two groups. And my parents wanted me to make sure that I understood that they did not stand for that, and that even though my mother was Lebanese and Christian, she was pro-Palestinian. And I just, all of it was so confusing. I didn't know what it was. So then they would constantly say Arab to make sure that right. I knew that it didn't matter we were Palestinian and Lebanese because we're all the same.
Well, let me ask you this. When you were among Jewish friends or Jewish people, did you mention the Palestinian part?
Never.
Never.
I would say a Lebanese.
Right.
And then I would cringe because I knew they would still hate me, but it was better than saying Palestinian.
Right, right. And Najla Saeed, when did you really become aware of just how much hostility there was in the world? Was it, or in the country, was it, did it get, I guess it got worse after 9/11, but of course in the 80s and 90s, you know, by then.
It was pretty bad in the 80s and 90s because I didn't know what to do with it. So I guess when the Intifada that started in Palestine in 1987, 88, and my dad was on TV, I was about to start high school. And then I went to the high school and most of my friends were Jewish. It was a different school. It was on the west side. And so I was suddenly with a lot of Jewish people, but I was also older and more comfortable saying that I was Palestinian and Lebanese. Also, my brother had been at that school for like 10 years, so they all knew where he was from.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't pretend. And it was fine, but it was also like the beginning of a lot of it's like my life and the trajectory of what's been going on in the Middle East have had this – it's just there's one thing after another. And as you get older, I couldn't pretend I didn't know or anything. So when I was in 11th grade, the first Gulf War started. And that was – I had been in Lebanon as a little girl in 1983 and been bombed. And I certainly had PTSD, although I didn't have any idea what that was or that I had it. But as and this is also in the book, but like I would, my friends, the way they were talking about bombing Iraq as if it was like a video game, very much upset me, and it set me off. And so that was very difficult for me, because I thought, don't you know that there's people there and those people are my people? I mean, they're not my people really, but they're, you know, and also just the way that Palestinians were talked about in movies as terrorists, mm-hmm. and Beirut, you know, Beirut in the 80s, Beirut was like, ugh, it's like Beirut, you know.
Right. That's right, right.
It just meant hell.
That's right.
And so,
you know, I wanted to ask you something about your name when you were little, Najla, N-A-J-L-A. Two little sisters came to my house recently to sell Girl Scout cookies, and one of them had a name similar to yours, and her sister's name was similar to that name with a different. It started with a different letter, but you know, I assumed. What did I assume? I assumed they were Arab. There was some Arab ancestry there, and I thought both the names are beautiful. I think your name is beautiful. So. But your name is different, right? So when you go into Chapin School and then later to the other school, your name probably stood out, right? Someone would say to you, what kind of name is that, right?
Mm-hmm. That, and it still does.
It still does.
There's a lot of Middle Eastern people give their kids names that, and a lot of just immigrants do this, they give their kids names that can be pronounced easily by Americans. Like, so a lot of Lebanese girls or Palestinian girls that I knew, their parents had named them like Layla or Dina or, you know, Mona or something that is easy.
Mm-hmm.
My name was, it's also not that common because it's not a Muslim name. So Najla is like, I don't know. And the J and the L next to each other, only French people can figure that out. And it's just like, I just felt, yeah. And so I didn't, everyone would say it was pretty, but no one ever called me by my name the way it was supposed to. It was, I became another person because everyone would add vowels to it, Najla and stuff. And, and it's Najla. It's not Najla, but now I'm Najla because that's the only thing people can pronounce. So I go by that, even though it's not really my name.
Najla?
Yeah.
Najla Saeed. Yeah. We're going to take
No, you pronounced it right.
Yeah, I thought I did. Yeah.
You did.
I've been practicing before we got on the air.
Najla,
we're going to take another break here. We'll come back and talk some more. Looking for Palestine, growing up confused in an Arab-American family, the book by our author guest in this segment of Midday. A short break, folks. We'll be right back. I'm back with Najla Saeed talking about her memoir, Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family. And I want to ask you about this before we continue with the story a little bit. Sometimes Americans say, well, you're not a hyphenated American, you're just an American. Stop telling me about how you're Jewish American or Italian American or Afro-American. You're just an American. There's some people who are completely impatient with references to the immigrant experience, even if it was like two generations ago, right? And there are others of us who just like to keep these things alive because we think that is the American experience. You don't want to lose your Italian ancestry identity. I certainly don't. The food's too good. And, so I wonder, there was must have been a time when you said, gee, I wish this was a whole lot easier for me.
Yeah, I mean, Arab American is a weird thing because there's 22 countries in the Arab League. So, like, that's just – it's vastly different. So Saudi Arabia versus Lebanon, it's really two different cultures. The thing that unites Arab countries is the language. So how people perceive the word Arab is different everywhere. And then on top of that, the first sort of wave of Arab American immigrants – or immigrants from the Middle East came from Syria and Lebanon in the late 19th century, I guess, or I'm not really sure when, but they came around, they were escaping the Ottomans, so most of them were Christian. They were minority religions. And so a lot of them ended up in the Detroit area. They were working in the car industry, the automotive industry. And so there's I'm sure a lot of people know this, but in Detroit, for example, there's a major population of Arab Americans, but a lot of them now are like third and fourth generation.
Right.
And originally they were Lebanese and Christian or Syrian and Christian. Then now we have all these other immigrants coming in they're coming in much more now and they're Muslims and they're refugees and they're from Iraq or they're from Syria or they're from Lebanon, you know, wherever they're from. And there's a whole different thing. So I was given this, to me, Arab American was always like Danny Thomas or like Ralph Nader or the people in Michigan.
Uncle Tanus Danny Thomas show. I remember
him. They were more American.
Yes.
They were much more American.
Yes.
And then there's became this, when it's like after 9/11 and stuff, then the Arab American now is a person who's Muslim, who has a hijab, a scarf on, or whatever. And actually
secretly hates the country, right?
Right. And I'm neither of those. And so there was this sort of like problematic of what about those of us who have a foot in both cultures, but I'm not an Arab American, like that the American overrides the Arab, and I'm not an Arab American where the Arab overrides him. It's like they're almost equal. And I just feel like there's no room for that. And that's a little problematic. And, you know, as you said, you were Italian. My best friend in the whole world he was born in Sicily but grew up in Brooklyn. And he goes to Sicily and it's his first language and he feels Sicilian and American. And I don't, you know, but then, of course, as you know, Italian American has a very specific connotation. So it's like the gradations of assimilation can't be accounted for. And how much of you feel part of this and how much you feel part of that, it gets very confusing for people.
After 9/11, tell us a little bit more about how you decided to function professionally as an actress after 9/11.
Well, it was actually before 9/11 where I started becoming curious, and there were about six or seven of us Arab American actors who we just met and started talking about maybe doing a play about our culture. We were all pretty American. And we had just started acting, so this kind of thing had been thrown on us about our ethnicity, and we were like a little confused. And a lot of the other people were half, you know, so their mom was American or Dutch or whatever. And so we decided to explore it by working on a play together. And we were kind of just a learning experience for us. But then 9/11 happened as we were working on it. And so we did the performance in the summer of 2002, and it was just so important at that time, given what had started happening, that it became like, we really should be working on this. We really should be doing this everywhere. And then, as I said, my auditions became all Arab all the time. And then you realize that a lot of the people writing these things don't really know anything about the culture, and they're operating off of stereotypes. So it became important to me, and this is sort of the funny part, because I say in the book, I was like always avoiding my dad's work and not reading it and not caring. But this is what he wrote, which was, you know, the idea of Orientalism being that, like, don't you write my history. You can't create who I am. I'm going to tell you where I'm from and what my culture is like and who I am. And so it became very important, because it's just overwhelming how wrong these
stereotypes
are. Yeah. I mean, it's sickening, actually. Yeah.
So traveling to the Middle East, to Lebanon, to Palestine, helped you a great deal.
Mm-hmm. I was born in 1974, and the war in Lebanon started 2 years later. So for the first few years of my life, we were able to go to Lebanon in the summers, because there really wasn't, you know, it was always in just certain areas. So we would go in the summer and everything was okay. I didn't really know there was a war. In 1983, we went and they were shelling around our neighborhood. So that's when the really big trauma happened. And I really realized, I was 9 years old and we were stuck and they were bombing downstairs. And we had to get on a boat and go to Cyprus to, like, escape. And so then I didn't go to the Middle East. I mean, I went to Egypt and I went to Morocco for a family vacation, but I didn't go to the Middle East from the age of 9 until the age of 18. So, and those are the years, you know, where you're trying to fit in more than anything. So from 9 to 18, I was just American. And then we went back in 1992 when I was 18, and I just was very much affected. We went to Palestine. That's the first and only time I went. And that was very difficult because everyone thought we were Jewish from New York. And I was like, no, we're the – and it was very difficult. And then we went to Lebanon, which is – and it was the first time back since the war. And – but I just felt so loved and nourished, and I felt like I had my family back. I felt like I belonged somewhere. So in a way, it sort of saved me to sort of reconnect with that place.
So you've sort of established a kind of peace about this mm-hmm. after all this time, it seems to me. This idea that you have this mixed background. I'm a Palestinian, Lebanese, American, Christian mm-hmm. woman, but I grew up as a Jew in New York City and began my life as a WASP. Well, all that sounds very confusing, which, you know, gets the story started. That's how your book opens. But by the time we get to the end, you're sort of connected to all of these pieces of you.
Exactly.
You're happy with it all. It's made life more interesting, Najla.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, as a kid, I wanted to pass. So I would take whichever thing, you know, if I was at school and everyone was Episcopalian, I'd be like, I'm Episcopalian too. I would take whichever thing that I could latch on to fit in and hold on to it. And try to deny all the others. But now I realize how incredible, like, that's kind of a wonderful gift. I mean, there are very few people who can tell you what each Jewish holiday is about and say they're Palestinian. Like, you know, I can basically speak Yiddish. So there's so many different parts to me that I feel like that makes for a more, I mean, in the sense of being a humanist, that's exactly what a humanist is. You're sort of like understanding more people. It's also why I became interested in theater, I think, because you have the opportunity to put yourself in another person's shoes. And so you become more empathic and more able to connect. And I think that, I mean, it's frustrating at times. It's confusing. Right now, the other night when we started bombing Syria, I was crying because I feel like I'm attacking myself sometimes and I can't stop it. And it's very alienating and isolating to be here and disagree with the policy and just like know that your family might be the next country to be bombed, but then you stop and you say, no, this is a gift because I am here and I can communicate to the people here who accept me as American what it is like to be there.
Right.
So
right.
It's frustrating, but you have to kind of find a way to use it, I guess.
When I brought up 9/11 a couple of times, but I didn't ask you what I wanted to ask you, which was where you were that day, how you reacted to this. Did you speak, and your father was still alive then, did you speak to your father about what was happening in New York City?
I woke up that morning and I just went to the gym like I normally do. And the first plane had hit the tower and everyone was looking at the TV and I was like, okay, something happened. And I thought like everyone else that it was just like the plane lost a signal and like crashed, but whatever. Mm-hmm. And then when the second plane hit, I just was overwhelmed, and like everyone, we all stopped working out and we sat down and everyone who was at the gym was just watching the TVs, and it was horrifying. But I suddenly felt, and this is something that any Arab American can describe to you, and it happened to me Oklahoma City bombing when I was in college. You're suddenly like, oh my God, I hope it wasn't an Arab. And then you suddenly feel everyone in the room decide that it's an Arab. And I write about this in the book. This person that was standing next to me was like, this is so the Palestinians. And I just like exploded because that's such an uninformed thing to say. And, you know, even if it were Arabs who did this, like, why are you saying Palestinians? Like, Palestinians don't want to, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I got very unhappy and I was scared. So I was kind of like reliving the trauma of being in Beirut as a kid, which just jumps up at you where you feel so afraid and scared, just like anyone with PTSD, and so unsafe. But then you realize you're home and you're not safe. And the people that are attacking you are your people. So it kind of happened to me on both sides. It happened to me in Lebanon and again in 2006 in Lebanon and then here. And, you know, it's like, what? And it's so frightening. So
and you become – you must have become very self-conscious. And
yeah.
I just want to – we're about out of time, Najla. But
no problem.
That conversation with your dad that day, I was just struck by that.
Yeah.
You must just blurted out, why would we do this? Did we do this? You asked your father.
Yeah. I called him and I was like, what is it? Did we do it? What? Why would we do it? And then I was so scared that I was going to get deported or something for saying that. And I didn't know what to do, and I was so scared. And he was like, he was much more calm than everyone else. But because he sort of knew these things would come, and so he was very rational about it. And he was like, well, you know, but that's when he stopped talking on the news because he thought, there's nothing I can say if they ask me to explain why they hate us, then I'm apologizing for the terrorists. And if I don't, then then the Arabs hate me and I'm a horrible person because I'm defending America. So he bowed out quietly. And
Najla, I don't know if you have plans to do your play again, but you could always try to bring it to Baltimore. We'd love to see you perform this on stage.
Thank you. I'll try to make it happen.
Go on the road. Bring it to Baltimore. Najla Saeed's been our guest. Looking for Palestine, her book, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family. And it's Riverhead Books, part of Penguin, that published that. Thank you very much, Najla.
Thank you so much.
Yes, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in. That's our midday for today and for the week. Back again on Monday for another edition of our show. Thank you so much for listening. Have a great afternoon and a great weekend.